welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 Category Smart. I'm Jessie Colhagen, and you're listening to The Life Note, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, by Marshall Goldsmith and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. Look at your personal map. Trace the distance between your vision of here and there. You are here. You can get there. But you have to understand that what got you here won't get you there. End quote. With possibly one of the best book titles of all time, What Got You Here Won't Get You There challenges you to break the habits that hold you back. Whether your habit is not listening, making excuses, or any of the 20-plus habits identified in this book, you'll learn how to move beyond these habits to achieve your goals. In this Life Note, we'll touch on just a few of those habits, as well as several suggestions for how we can change for the better. The author, Marshall Goldsmith, is described as corporate America's preeminent executive coach. He's worked with over 80 CEOs in top corporations and has received numerous accolades, including being named one of the top great thinkers and business leaders by the American Management Association. With a bio like that, you can probably guess that this book is going to be chock full of valuable insights and advice you can benefit from. The first big thought: no, but, and however. Don't start your sentences with these. Quote, when you start a sentence with no, but, or however, or any variation thereof, no matter how friendly your tone or how many cute mollifying phrases you throw in to acknowledge the other person's feelings, the message to the other person is, you are wrong. End quote. As one of the 20-plus habits Marshall Goldsmith identifies, the habit of using no, but, and however is one of those very prevalent habits that you may have no idea you're doing. In fact, raising your awareness of this habit is a great place to start. Marshall suggests that for 1 week you keep track of how often your coworkers use these words. You'll be shocked. Then try to track your own use of these words. You might be even more shocked. What's interesting about this particular habit is that it feels so good to do it, and yet so terrible when someone does it to us. We love to add our qualifiers to someone's suggestions or ideas. That new product is interesting, but our factory could never make it. Or that restaurant is okay, but it's always so crowded. These things might be true, but all the same, it can feel incredibly frustrating to have our great ideas shot down with negativity. It takes practice both to notice and identify when we use these negative words, and also to practice using alternatives. How about, that product is interesting. I wonder if our factory can make it. Or, that restaurant is okay. I hope it's not too crowded tonight. These very simple variations can make a big difference in how someone receives our feedback. Whenever you use the word but as a qualifier, it can immediately negate everything that was said just in front of it to the listener. Does this ring true for you? For example, if you hear, you're a great friend, but, do you think you'll pay any attention to the you're a great friend part? No, you're going to fixate on whatever criticism just came after that. Marshall has the clever suggestion that every time you use no, but, or however, you pay someone a fine. Perhaps you can ask a colleague to monitor this for you. No doubt you will quickly begin to modify your behavior as the fines rack up. Big thought number two, clinging to the past. Here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Quote, I don't have much patience with therapy that clings to the past, because going backwards is not about creating change, it's about understanding. End quote. We all have stuff that happened in the past that impacts us now. Maybe you had a lousy childhood. Perhaps your parents didn't love you enough, or on the other hand, indulged you too much. Or maybe it was a romantic relationship that caused you pain in the past that you're still clinging to now. Your boyfriend criticized you. Your ex-wife didn't appreciate you. That guy on Match.com never texted you back. All of us certainly have something from our past that still gets in our way today. Try asking yourself, how is it serving me now to hold on to this negative stuff that happened in the past? Or, as Marshall Goldsmith said to a whining client, quote, here's a quarter, call someone who cares, end quote. He goes on to explain that there isn't anything wrong with understanding, especially if you're having a hard time accepting the past. At some point, though, if you want to change the future, you're going to need to figure out how to stop clinging to what happened in the past and move forward into action. What can you do now? What can you do today? Consider what Alexander Graham Bell once said. When one door closes, another opens, but we often look so long and so regretfully upon the closed door that we do not see the one which has opened for us. What about you? Are you looking at the open door or the closed one? Big thought number three, not expressing regret, learning to apologize. Quote, if you look back at the tattered relationships in your life, I suspect many of them began to fray at the precise moment when one of you couldn't summon the emotional intelligence to say, I'm sorry, end quote. Another habit the author shares that holds people back is their unwillingness to apologize or express regret. Perhaps you know someone who went for years without speaking to a family member or friend because they simply wouldn't express regret about what was said or done. It hurts just to hear those stories. In the workplace, there can be factors at play when it comes to not apologizing, such as concern about appearing to lose power or feeling that you would lose control if you do apologize. In fact, Marshall argues the opposite is true. You have more control when you apologize. Yes, of course, it's hard to apologize. It's very hard. So then let's go back to that character category in our life book. Building a strong character is not easy, but you do it anyway. If you want to be a great leader, someone with high emotional intelligence, and you want to have great relationships, you're going to need to do some things that make you uncomfortable from time to time. And yes, apologizing is going to be one of those uncomfortable things. Marshall does a great job of articulating an apology that we all might be wise to take note of. Quote, I can't change the past. All I can say is, I'm sorry for what I did wrong. I'm sorry it hurt you. There's no excuse for it, and I will try to do better in the future. I would like you to give me any ideas about how I can improve. End quote. Now, can you imagine having someone say that to you? It would be so challenging to refuse to accept such a heartfelt apology that clearly takes such full responsibility for hurting the person and even asks for feedback. Note, this is not one of those wimpy, I'm sorry, but apologies. There's no, I'm sorry, but it was really your fault kind of statements. Rather, this is clearly an apology from someone of strong character who's big enough to apologize without all the qualifiers that would negate the apology or even make it worse. Next time you need to apologize, it might be a very smart idea to pull out a copy of this book and take careful notes on how to get this apology right. Who knows? It might be one of the most important conversations you ever have. Big thought number four, goal obsession. Life would be perfect if, quote, in its broadest form, goal obsession is the force at play when we get so wrapped up in achieving our goal that we do it at the expense of a larger mission. It comes from misunderstanding what we want in our lives. We think we'd be truly happy, or at least happier, if only we made more money, or lost 30 pounds, or got the coroner office, end quote. This habit, goal obsession, is one that Marshall puts in a special place of consideration. He calls it the 21st habit. He points out that goal obsession is a valuable attribute much of the time. It can help us to achieve things and to overcome obstacles. Goals are good, yet what we may fail to realize is that there are two sides to the coin. If we're relentless about our goal to make money, we might ignore our loved ones. If we're relentless about creating a successful business, we might never have enough time to actually enjoy the wealth that comes from the business we create. Or we might become so stressed out in the process of creating that business that our health suffers significantly. Does any of this feel true to you? For those who are very goal-oriented, and this probably describes a lot of Lifebook members, it's quite possible that you have been afflicted with this goal obsession in the past or from time to time, or even now. So if you find yourself feeling like life would be perfect if, step back and ask yourself, is this really true? Is there a price that I'll end up paying for this particular goal obsession? Perhaps in the form of failed relationships, poor health choices, or an inordinate amount of time spent on something that maybe wasn't really that important after all? It really comes down to your reasons why, and this is why you're asked to articulate your reasons why along with your vision in creating your life book. That way, if your reason why for getting the corner office is that you want to provide a great life for your family, you'll be reminded that providing the great life involves not just the things you buy them, but also the quality time and experiences you have with them. Yes, goals are good. Goal obsession? not so good. The helpful distinction that Marshall points out is to make sure your goals serve your larger mission. Let's lift our heads up from time to time so we can see the big picture, because it can easily get lost in the day-to-day details of our lives. Big thought number 5, active listening, separating near great from great. Quote, the thing about listening that escapes most people is that they think of it as a passive activity. You don't have to do anything. You sit there like a lump and hear someone out. Not true. Good listeners regard what they do as a highly active process, with every muscle engaged, especially the brain. End quote. After reviewing the 21 habits, Marshall outlines a 7-step method for how we can change for the better. You'll want to check all 7 steps out in the book, but let's consider one here now, which has to do with listening. And not just any listening, active listening. Being a great listener is a hugely powerful skill. Quote, the ability to make a person feel that when you're with that person, he or she is the most important and the only person in the room is the skill that separates the great from the near great. End quote. When you listen, are you really listening to the other person? Or are you simply waiting for them to stop talking so you can interject whatever you want to say? When your husband is telling you what a tough day he had, is your natural inclination to jump in with your own tough day story? Or are you really listening to what he wants to share with you? On her final show, after 25 years of talking and listening to nearly 30,000 people from every walk of life, Oprah said this about validation and being heard. Quote, I would tell you that every single person you ever meet shares that common desire. They want to know, do you see me? Do you hear me? Does what I say mean anything to you? End quote. What about you? Are you really listening? Are you ignoring someone or really hearing them and validating them? And are you interested in being great or just nearly great? Big thought number 6, following up, nightly follow-up routine. Quote, let me show you how follow-up works in my life. I have a coach. His name is Jim Moore, a longtime friend who's a coaching professional. Every night, wherever I am in the world, it's Jim's job as my coach to call and ask me questions. End quote. If you're looking for a groundbreaking new habit to add to dramatically increase accountability towards achieving your goals, you'll find this next one to be a fantastic one to consider. Each night, the author has a series of questions that he asks so that he can benchmark against key goals. For example, quote, how much walking did you do? How much time did you spend watching TV or surfing the internet? And how much time did you spend writing? End quote. Marshall Goldsmith believes so strongly in the power of this nightly question habit that he has someone check in with him each and every day to make sure that these questions are answered daily. This distinction is worth repeating. The key to his success is that he has someone else check in with him daily. This type of commitment should be an example to us all. If you're absolutely determined to change your habits, you'll want to put in place a system like this that will increase the likelihood that you'll actually follow through. If you want to be a better writer, and each day your answer to how much time did you spend writing was 0, you're going to quickly start to feel uncomfortable with that answer and begin to change your behavior. Or if at the end of the week you tally up a total of just 2 hours spent with your kids, you might start to realize that it's time to scale back on your work commitments to make more time for your family. What are the activities or habits that you want to track daily? Are you ready to really commit to this daily tracking? Can you identify an accountability partner to help keep you on track here? The book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, is full of great suggestions like this that will help you break old habits that are not working for you and install new habits that will take you to that new place, wherever there is for you. If you want to be there rather than stuck here, consider reading this book as a great first step on your journey. So there we have it, Marshall Goldsmith's guide to breaking the habits that hold you back. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.